It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is Time Enough Podcast. Hello, welcome to Time Enough Podcast. Yea, though we walk through the valley of the shadow of death, we will fear no evil. For you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. I guess that's you, Brian. Hi.
Hi, I'm comforting Brian this week.
Yeah, Nat here as always, that's right. I would just like, just get that out of the way, you know, because people are thinking of Jules and Pulp Fiction screaming that at people and shooting them.
Yeah. Got to get the whole biblical aspect squared away.
Sure, we'll get comments for me.
Were there any real shadows in
biblical
this?
Verses on air? But I did use it blasphemously, if that makes anyone happy.
I didn't even really see a valley. I just saw a town, or maybe it was a backlot.
It's a very peaceful valley, as you can see behind me on my background, if you happen to be on YouTube or something. But
well, that's not just an establishing shot of some hills or something. Like, okay, there's the hills are over there, so we're in the valley here, right?
Well, we're on Hollywood backlots. Let's be real.
Well, also, any town called Valley is not even necessarily a valley, I guess, when you think about it. I'm sure there's examples.
I have to check what the town is called in 2000 Maniacs, the movie produced not too long after. Same year? 64, same year. Okay, do you know what I'm talking about?
What was the film?
It's a 1964 early splatter movie. Hicksploitation, that's what they call it. It's Pleasant Valley, yes. It's Pleasant Valley in the movie 2000 Maniacs as well. So
wait a minute, it was a 64? Yeah. That close to this era?
Yeah,
no, this was
63. Yeah, it was a year after, so...
Oh, someone.
They might have watched this because I think they filmed 2000 Maniacs in something like 3 days.
Well, I was going to ask, I wanted to talk about other instances in fiction, science fiction, in particular, where you have a secret society. There's also a lot of this, I guess, in fantasy as well. But the
I wrote down
the first example that jumped to mind was Eureka, which is, you know, a science fiction series on Sci-Fi Channel many years ago where the town is... basically, a bunch of geniuses work for the government, but the town is hidden. It's actually under a force field. They have a force field in this episode, but it's not an invisibility force field. So I was thinking, if they just had invisibility, if the mysterious benefactor from the past had invisibility on his list of gadgets, then they would have been fine. The town would just be invisible and no one ever comes there.
Didn't your notes say Brigadoon? Brigadoon, you know?
Yes. I said Brigadoon because at the beginning, it's like, oh, here's a road that... may disappear tomorrow and not even be there, but apparently I guess we're supposed to believe it's always there.
You
all
can
the time
find it.
And it's a bit like Little Anthony's Town in A Good Life too, you know, in that it's a town that would disappear, but it's not like that at all. It turns out I guess we're supposed to believe that town is always there because people can wander into it at any time, even though this guy's the first one who've done it since what, Stalin died or something.
Yeah. I think the closest
and brought a newspaper
hit. I think the closest hit we get here is probably maybe Lost Horizon and Shangri-La, because Shangri-La has all the secrets that humanity does not have. So,
okay.
I don't know.
Well,
if you've
of course,
there's the Capra version, which is legit good, and then there's the '70s version, which is worth watching.
The bad musical. Is it a musical?
Yeah. I covered a song from it once on an album. Burt Bacharach wrote the music. I think Hal Davis even wrote the lyrics. So it's, you know, yeah.
I've never watched either version to tell you the truth. But the more modern example of a secret civilization, not just a town, of course, is Wakanda.
Oh, so right.
And backwoods Wakanda.
And that's the central thing of the first Black Panther movie, where Killmonger wants to, well, basically open up the world and share with humanity, although he has a violent version of doing that, right? But same idea of letting the technology get out of town. I mean, spread, disseminate from town there. That's a better way to say it. I will do a bit of, oh, last one before anyone shouts me, because I did a podcast on The Village. Okay. The Prisoner.
Oh, yeah, The Village. That's a modern take on it, of course. I was trying to think of examples. I knew there were more than, you know, two.
Yeah. I can't leave that out, having done an entire podcast on that.
We'll probably think three more during the course of the show. So,
as for this episode, original air date was January 17th, 1963. Script is a signature Charles Beaumont metaphysical mind corker. I guess it's scientifically based, but it feels metaphysical. For it's, you know, science is magic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Perry Lafferty had a 3-episode consecutive directing run on The Twilight Zone, and now he is finished. If you want more details, listen to the previous 2 episodes. Ed Nelson played Philip Redfield. He was best known as Dr. Michael Rossi on Peyton Place, but had many TV and movie credits with some Roger Corman flicks and something called The Brain Eaters catching my attention. I guess you catch those bacteria in a badly cleaned swimming pool. I don't know. David Apatoshu's Dorn. He was a star of the Yiddish theater stage and then Broadway. But let us dorks not mince words. You, of course, know him as Anon Seven from Star Trek's A Taste of Armageddon. As soon as it popped up on screen, I was like, wait, I didn't like make that connection instantly. But I was like, oh, God, I know this guy. And that's the only thing I know him from. So I don't think I caught much of the Yiddish stage, unfortunately, in the 1940s. Speaking of Star Trek, James Doohan played that father who gets 5 or so lines at the start of the episode. Of course, James Doohan was played by Chief Engineer Montgomery Scott, sans fake Scottish accent. That was not a typo. I meant to write it that way. Okay, I will flippity-flop a prologue to your screen. I think I'm making a few noises as I do it, but here it is.
You've seen them, little towns tucked away far from the main roads. You've seen them, but have you thought about them? What do the people in these places do? Why do they stay? Philip Redfield never thought about them. If his dog hadn't gone after that cat, he would have driven through Peaceful Valley and put it out of his mind forever. But he can't do that now, because whether he knows it or not, his friend's shortcut has led him straight to the capital, of the Twilight Zone. Yeah, blew it.
Oh, well, I didn't really think about that. The capital of the Twilight Zone. Okay.
That's kind of a strange concept in itself. It's like, oh, this is where all the weird stuff comes from.
So that area in Little Girl Lost several episodes back, that's like the municipal park of the Twilight Zone then? I don't know. Take your dog there, that sort of thing. Well, you take your dog to Peaceful Valley too.
Well, that's our next, Ask Me Anything for this podcast is, what do you consider the capital of the Twilight Zone to be? Yeah, is it Little Girl Lost? Is it the fourth dimension behind the bed? Or is it this town? Or is it, I don't know. There's a lot of places you could point to, I suppose.
Right. This does pass the dog test that we saw in The Hunt. They not only accept his dog, but resurrect his dog. So, you know, Redfield could stay here. It passes the dog test. I guess he's not quite dead until he is or whatever. But
you mean if the dog's gone, then you're gone. But if the dog's here, then you're here.
Well, in The Hunt, they wouldn't let him in to do. Well, it turned out to be hell where they wouldn't accept his dog. So he had to wait till they'd accept the dog to find the true heaven. So, but Peaceful Valley, in the end, I guess it is more of a technological thing. How much were you scratching your head for the flip or the twist on this? I mean, there were 5 different twists in my mind, one of which kind of was the one that happened, right? But I wasn't like quite sure which of the 5 is going to turn out to be. If I was betting, I would have bet on a more metaphysical thing, just being a Twilight Zone episode. But I guess it's not.
Yeah, there was, like I said, that one at the beginning, it's like, well, is this town going to turn out to be something that comes and goes, like Brigadoon or Shangri-La? You just don't ever see it, except when you happen to be at the right time. I got the Invaders vibes off of it at the beginning, which may be a little closer to the premise, because we think this town has alien technology. We don't know it for sure, but it's heavily hinted. And so it reminded me of, I believe in the pilot of The Invaders, David Vincent finds a town that's basically been, you know, run over with this, you know, duplicate aliens, and so they are running. They're running the show there for their own nefarious purposes, and it probably occurs several times more throughout the series. I haven't watched the entire series yet; it's on my back burner. But yeah, when I said "A Lonely Road to Nowhere," David Vincent, he's, you know, it's all, every episode starts with the narration, and so I thought of him immediately when I saw that Impala coming down the dirt road.
I haven't done that.
I think
show,
it's fun.
But, oh, go ahead.
Oh yeah. Well, maybe we should do that one next. yeah, it's kind of weird. I don't know why he has trouble finding the gas cap. Is that just a new innovation of 60s and that era of cars to put the gas cap behind the license plate? That's not true anymore. I think it was a fad almost. It stopped happening.
Oh, is that where it
after
is?
a certain
Okay, I'm
point.
not, yeah, I wasn't. I was paying more attention to the actual pump and stuff just because I was like, oh, that's kind of old and interesting, right? So I wasn't like, I actually got lost on the fact that he was getting lost in the car. But when you encounter a new car, it's not, you know, sometimes it takes you a moment to find the gas cap. I've had that happen before.
I thought he was acting like a guy who's trying to put gas in an electric car.
Yeah, exactly. I don't blame that guy. He can, especially considering the amount of business that they get in Peaceful Valley, you know, which I guess is why he was so confused. But
well, this was a pretty profitable day for him, since, you know, he got $4.42 from from the guy.
Yeah. Recently, I found I to try and be slightly healthier. I've been getting the soup at the 7-Eleven at night after work, right? Instead of like a hot dog or burrito or something, right? Oh, by the way, this is Japanese 7-Eleven food. It's actually like pretty good. But I've been getting soups, and I give it to the person on the counter. At first, they don't want to heat it up. How could you heat that up? And then they look like hopelessly confused, like maybe they need to have a course on the on how to heat up the soup. And I've had two explosions. They put it in the microwave, and they forgot to pop a hole in the top. And then
no, they didn't open the lid. No,
that's their fault, though. That's their fault. That's not my fault. They need to have soup training at the Japanese 7-Elevens, I guess.
You always have to tell people at work to put, you know, cover your food when you heat it up, otherwise the microwave just turns into a huge mess
yeah
by the end of the year.
Anyway, yes, so they are about as equally confused as this gas guy, and I don't think I found myself into a weird secluded town. Speaking of which, does Google Earth kind of negate this episode? Because I spend lots of time on Google Earth looking at like really like random, you know, secluded places.
Yeah, I like to do that too. I used to like looking at islands, because sometimes you see uninhabited islands, but then you'd see one that's got a bunch of stuff on it, and you go, "Oh, wait a minute. All right, whose island is this? And what is all that?" And half the time it turns out to be stuff from World War II, right? Somebody built an airstrip there to fight in the Pacific Theater. But
then you have places like Malay, where the Maldives, where it's like this pretty big city on this very tiny island in the middle of nowhere. That's trippy.
That is pretty crazy. And you see like an entire island come out of like a city coming out of the sea like that. There's a famous one. There's, I think, more than one famous one of that in your area in Japan, that they have some islands that are built up as kind of industrial plants or something.
Oh, yeah. There's a
they filmed a James Bond film at one of these, not like,
yes,
Skyfall,
they did.
I believe.
Yeah. You are. That is all correct. Yes. I've not visited there, but yeah, I
well,
guess
that would mean that this if this town still existed today, they definitely would have to push for the invisibility screen, because they can't hide from the satellites.
Right. So I was trying to think of, are there any places like this now? And well, one of them you can kind of look at. There's it's like one of the smallest islands on the Hawaiian chain. I think it's the westernmost island that's still populated. But they have a town which is basically like nobody comes on this island. We just live here. Everyone stay away.
Oh, is that the atoll? I think it's Kure Atoll.
Oh, no. This is still Hawaiian islands. This is Hawaiian. It's just they got their town, and they're like, we don't really want anyone to visit.
Two of the seven main Hawaiian islands are private property, right? I think
it might be because it's private.
One of
them.
Oh,
I don't know if Bezos owns it.
Bezos owns like Molokai. I'm not terrible with my Hawaiian. Yeah, but the other one up the northwesternmost. Yeah, it's also, I think, it was a private island for a long time.
Oh, there's that weird island where it's again, I know one is called like, it's like the Tomorrow and Yesterday Islands on the Alaskan Russian border, where You, the Russian one
Oh.
basically is the bigger one, but nobody's been allowed on there since, communism. Since Stalin died, nobody's been allowed on that. And then there's a very small community of indigenous folks on the tiny island, but they can't go to the island like 1 mile away because it's across the border.
One of the places I was looking at in Google Earth were the northwestern uninhabited, mostly uninhabited islands, and there's things like one called French Frigate Shoals, and a lot of them are just like a rock that sticks up out of the ocean, and you just can't really do much with it. But there's a couple you could conceivably build some sort of, secret society inside of. If it's tall enough, you can maybe excavate it and have like a villain lair there, for James
When
Bond to
I
discover.
opened my Google Earth, by the way, it was on Turkmenistan.
Well, as you do, don't we all like to check out Turkmenistan?
It sounds like hello in Chinese. Ni hao is the island that I think you're not welcome to. But there's a little town there. Yeah. And the other one, the one that's even more fun, I assume you've heard of, well, I don't assume you've heard, but North Sentinel Island. Have you heard of that one?
North Sentinel. Where's that one?
That is in the Indian Ocean, like the eastern part of the Indian Ocean, and there are people living there, and they try to kill anyone who comes onto the island. So
Oh,
we have not made contact with the people who live on that
the
island.
natives are not happy. Okay.
Yeah. So we that's it's like the one place on Earth that we don't have contact with the people living there in some form. But even North Korea, you can contact North Korea if you really want to. Hey, you can take a tour of North Korea if probably not if you're American right now, but they do that. I've watched YouTube videos on multiple occasions.
Yeah, there's Necker Island. I mean, you can go way into the
Yeah.
weeds here, but I seem to recall there's an atoll that just has some researchers on it. That's like the most distant of what's considered the Hawaiian Islands. I can't remember what it's called.
But that doesn't
And
count as like permanently inhabited, I guess is the thing there.
no, Pinnacles. There's Gardner Pinnacles, which is just, yeah, it's like it's giant. The whole area is just a
What else is
wildlife
fascinating?
reserve.
Oh, the town in the Grand Canyon. That's kind of fun. And it's only accessible by trail or helicopter.
I've never been down into the Grand Canyon. I've visited the rim a couple of times, but that's it.
I
I
tried
like
to
to do
visit
the whole
the
thing though.
Grand Canyon once, but the car died like 3 times.
That sounds like an omen. It's like, nope, sorry.
It was my friend's car. I actually landed in your hometown. We landed in San Francisco, hung around there, drove down to San Luis Obispo, went to Las Vegas, and then we were going to the Grand Canyon. She went to school in Prescott or whatever, so we were going to Grand Canyon Prescott, but we had to skip the Grand Canyon part because the car didn't work no more. That's also why I did Star Trek The Experience. So
Yeah, back when that existed.
that was the Klingon version. So I think I was glad to have done that one. I mean, I'm
So
sure the other's fun, but yeah, go ahead. I'm on a tangent.
what about the tech? Yeah, we're always on a tangent because it's interesting. Like I said, it's like this notion of a secret society. It's like, where would it be? Oh, and aren't there ones like in like fantasy and horror where that's where the werewolves live in this one town, or all the vampires live in this other town, and they just kind of lay low and try not to reveal themselves. But I was thinking about this technology. Of course, everything looked like a Geiger counter. It's like a little Geiger counter and a bigger Geiger counter.
Well, in
You
this one, they
point
had
it.
for, I think I was like, actually, I did not positively ID Forbidden Planet props, but I did notice that they made the sounds came from Forbidden Planet this time with that
Yeah, the sound effects.
oscillator stuff sounded like, I actually used to own the, probably still do somewhere, but have the Forbidden Planet soundtrack on CD, which is not that pleasant to listen on its own.
I've got that CD too. Yeah, it's a woo. Yeah, it's pretty far out there. The thing about sound effects in this era is I'm always surprised to hear Star Trek sound effects before Star Trek premiered. And then I realized, oh, those weren't original at Star Trek. It's like, nope, they were in the music library for years before anybody pulled them out the sound effects library
And Star
from
Trek
Star
actors, of
Trek.
course.
Yeah, I'm starting to, keep track of the ones who aren't on the Twilight Zone. I think Nichelle Nichols and Walter Koenig are about the only ones I can think of now. Oh, wait a minute, D. Kelly wasn't either. So that's like of the main seven, four of them showed up in the Twilight Zone at some point or
Yeah,
another.
yeah. Reasonable. And let's go guest stars if you want. Then you can weigh up those stats.
Oh yeah, good old Lanon Seven. He's just as menacing as ever in this one as he was in Star Trek,
No,
isn't he?
as I said, I like 30 seconds after he shows up on screen, I'm like, I know who this is, and I couldn't I couldn't idea it quite that fast. I did need a little wiki help to make it there. But then I was like, oh, and then I was kicking myself in the head a little bit.
He's essentially the same character. He's like a leader of a group of people who don't want outsiders, and so we're going to kill you or otherwise, you know, dispose of you so we don't have to deal with you anymore. That's
right.
What happened.
Well, this
on
guy's a
seven,
little
as
less hardcore, you know. if you're willing to
yeah
play his
yeah
game, he's not, I mean, you know, with the crew of the Enterprise, like, okay, your ship is dead, everyone dies. Whereas here, he's kind of like, dude, you can hang out if you want.
The other piece of tech they had were those little glass, they look like hourglasses. I call them salt shakers. Crystalline walkie-talkie things they pull out and talk to each other on. You never hear anybody talk back. They just talk into it and then put it away. It's like,
you don't talk
wait
back
a
in
minute.
Peaceful Valley.
We just make reports and then we never actually get confirmation that you got the report. But okay. That was kind of weird. I was trying to put my finger if I'd seen that in something else. It looks like it's something that,
it took me
again,
5 seconds actually to ID James Doohan, because I've heard his real voice, but I haven't actually seen footage of him speaking in his real voice. You know, like the animated series, he does like what all like 90% of the voices. So you hear him doing many
yeah,
other
it's kind of
voices. But seeing him not doing fake Scottish, it did take me. I mean, I didn't have to look up Wiki for him, but it took me, you know, 5 seconds. Like, oh crap, that's him there. Okay. Like the first line he said, I didn't catch it. The second line, I caught it.
Yeah, he was not prominently featured at all. He just was walk on role, take care of the kid situation, and then we don't see him again. In fact, we really don't see a town of what? Population 981 says design. No extras outside of the main cast. There's no one walking around.
They're all having lunch at home.
Yeah, they're all, well, we eat at home. What? Why do you go to a restaurant? They don't even open the restaurant for themselves. That's the weird thing. It's like, well, you'd usually walk into a small town, you know, bar, restaurant, whatever.
That
The locals
kind
are
of.
going to be there, but not in this case because the locals are at home, I don't know, playing virtual reality video games that no one's heard of because it's 1963. What do they do? Something's keeping them occupied. That's kind of another whole twist of this. It's like, what's so fascinating about their technology that they don't even interact with the real world at all? They just kind of do their own thing. Maybe they're all asleep or something. Who knows? We never find out.
I went to Fez, Morocco once, and I remember it was a little difficult to figure out where to eat dinner because they eat at home. I was traveling with my girlfriend at the time, and all the cafes were just all men. So we're like, where do you? And they, you know, it didn't look like an obvious place to have dinner either. Like, where do you eat? Eventually, this guy like talks to us, and he's like, oh yeah, my brother owns a restaurant. I'll take you there. And we follow him for like 20 minutes, and we're like, is this guy taking us somewhere to get jacked? But no, he took us to a restaurant that his brother apparently owned, and it was fine.
Oh, his brother owned. So he's the PR.
Yeah, he's
he's
going
the
out
advertisement.
Searching
He just
for
rounds up
lost foreigners because
random lost tourists and brings them all to the restaurant. It's a pretty good gig if you can get it, I guess.
That's right. So, and anyway, we did end up making it work out. We did better than Redfield. We did get dinner in the end. So,
oh, I'm glad to hear you were fed. That's
and he turned down a sandwich. Don't turn down the sandwich. What's wrong with you? It's, you know. Do it.
As soon as I saw that sandwich, I immediately thought of the Orville
because
of that time traveling sandwich you sent to the future and then ate it when it arrived later. I thought that was hilarious.
Speaking of which,
yeah,
later,
well, we did see some other people in the town. I forgot. There's that little cluster of farmers where we just showed up when the car wrecked. And I call them the gaslighting brigades. Like, oh, no, nothing happened. No, you must have hit a rock. And then, oh, you must be injured. We have to take you in. And like, it was just so totally, those guys were probably the creepiest thing in the episode because the way they came out of
well,
nowhere.
They're the most 2000 maniacs part of it too.
And they don't, yeah. And they don't have any sort of reason for being there other than they were probably forewarned. But it's like, do they have like drills in the situation where a stranger comes to town? How do we handle it? You know, it's like they all just kind of go off the same script they've probably had on the books since 1909 or something. And someone thought, what do we do when a stranger comes to town?
When Redfield goes back to the 3D replicator thing, I'm sitting there watching it somewhat late at night. And the whole until the gun shows up, I'm like, he's going to make a sandwich now. I thought he was going to make another sandwich. Like, why is he making a sandwich? Maybe now he's hungry. I don't know.
I thought that was kind of the heavy-handed point, you know. It's like, see, you humans with your stupid minds, stupid, you're just going to replicate guns as the very first thing you're going to do when you come, when you have use of this technology, you're just going to make a weapon out of it. And I'm thinking, well, I thought his main purpose was to steal the plans, not really to have to defend himself, because I guess against the little teleporting gizmos that zap him around, he didn't really have anything better. But I would have just taken the teleporting gizmo and pointed it at them and used it on them first before they used it on me. I wouldn't go for the violent option, but then he immediately shoots people.
Well, he proves their point, doesn't he?
I know. That's what I'm saying. It was kind of heavy-handed proving the point. It's like, I think this character wasn't that bright. He probably could have at least lied low for a few days until he got their trust and then tried to escape.
Oh, yeah, that was totally thinking that. I was like, dude, you don't need to do this, like, immediately.
Well, that brings us to Ellen, and she's clearly, you know, setting him up for failure, right? Try to trick him into leaving when he wasn't maybe fully prepared for it.
Yeah, that made me think a little bit. I keep mentioning the movie Seconds, but that was another one where there's kind of like a leading lady sort of in that role. Speaking of which, did I not put her in the trivia? I swear I wrote about her in the trivia. Hold on a moment. Hold your horses. Oh, weird. I just skipped over it when I was reading it. Okay, Ella Marshall was played by Natalie Trundy. Chances are you remember her as Ape and Not Ape in every Planet of the Apes movie except for the first one. I did write it. My eyes just skipped over it earlier. Weird.
She made you do that.
She made me do that.
She jumped you ahead a few seconds in time. Yeah, I'm a very freckle-faced lady.
But sticking with the Trek centric stuff, of course I'm thinking a little bit of the Cage while watching this too. They're not like trying to give him illusions so much, but sort of like, okay, you can't leave, but you can stay here and have whatever you want within the confines of here, you know. I did, maybe because this is like a human society without things that aren't real, I found that this is maybe, again, he could have hung around for a little while just to see what the deal is.
And they had a whole hour to kill in this season, so they could have had a montage or something. Walking around town, seeing the sights.
I did make a note right at the 25-minute mark that if Dorn had made a better explanation at that point, that would have made it a 25-minute episode.
Because
at that point, Dorn's explanation could have been a little more all-encompassing, and then boom, 25 minutes, we're finished. Which, I mean, yeah, I'm not saying that's how they stretched out this episode, because I'm assuming it probably was a 25-minute script at some point, assuming without knowing. But I was like, you could cut it there and have a pretty standard Twilight Zone.
Well, then how would it have ended? Not with him trying to leave, or?
It would have ended with him just being stuck there, you know, because there's some episodes where it's just like at the end, it's like, and now, you know, Mr. Redfield is going to spend the rest of his life in this town. But we don't see the, you know, events of the second half of the episode.
It's a little anticlimactic, though. He's just, well, I'm here. Goodbye, everybody.
We've had it a few times. People are like all over sort of along those lines, I guess.
Well, Flight 33, you know, was Flight like, 33. Here's some adventures. And now they go off and maybe live, maybe die. We don't know the end.
Well, is that a reason to justify this one being a 50-minute episode then? Maybe.
Well, then we come
one.
To the twist, right? Which is if they had this technology for time travel, they could have avoided the whole problem to begin with. They could have just done this the moment he came to town, and none of this would have happened.
Yeah, that is a good point. I mean, what exactly is happening at the end? Because you're like, okay, we're executing you, but now you're back in your car without your memory. What, they're just executing the last 2 days of his life? I mean, I think he can probably live with that.
Well, if they had like the Men in Black, you know, memory wand, but they just flash him and he could forget everything, that also would have been a solution. But we didn't see that technology in play, so we can't really assume that they had it. But it would have been great if they had, you know, fixed his car, probably just roll back time on the car until it was better again, put him in it, wake him up, and then have him get his gas and leave. The problem is he would have, you know, missing time. He would have, you know, have a day or so missing from his
life. Yeah, it happens.
Yeah. So that could have been the explanation.
He'll probably get lost again and end up in another weird town.
I think we're supposed to believe that, you know, they rolled time backward In which case, it just raises the question, why didn't they do that in the first place? They probably done it, 100 times a year when someone comes through town for the last 100 years. So I don't
Well,
know.
maybe it's very a risky, energy-consuming thing to do. I don't know. Maybe they have only a finite amount of energy to run this stuff. That could be part of keeping it to yourself. They
Yeah,
don't
you can
say that,
retcon it
but
a number of ways. I mean, the most basic way is we don't want to monkey with time unless it's absolutely necessary because bad things can happen, the butterfly effect sort of thing. It's like, oh, if we put him back on the road now, he'll run over a frog that will, eventually cause World War IV or something.
James Bond would have laid low and played the game of the town for a while before trying anything.
Yeah, you can kind of compare this to Kirk too, in
Yeah,
some respects, trying to get
he would
out
have
of the
played a game of
situation.
cricket with Dorn first or something, you know?
Yeah, well, he would have probably, slept with the leading lady and then tried to escape.
When he's got the force field around his house, at first I was like, oh, it's mime time, and he's doing the miming stuff. But then on the Blu-ray, it looked like there actually was a piece of glass there, because I could see like spots that seemed to be not part of the film. And
Well, Rolo was up against the glass. You saw his paws.
I guess
But
that's why. I guess dogs can't mime.
I think he was standing back pretending to hit it, because if he'd actually hit it, it probably would have wobbled and been very obvious,
Yeah, so I
a
guess it
piece of
was there for
glass.
the dog. Okay, that makes sense. Because I was like, come on, I'm sure this actor can like do that much miming, you know?
But it had to have been a solid piece of glass covering the entire frame of the shot, right? Otherwise, we would have seen a line somewhere.
Yeah.
So I think he looked like he was a step back from where the dog was when he was
Actually,
pretending to hit
now
it.
that you're saying that, it tracks. But And at the end, he stops the car when he's like 10 feet past the invisible wall. And the book was blank, so I guess it's good he checked it then and there. But I was like, why stop just 10 feet past the invisible wall? Maybe you should keep going a while. I don't know.
Yeah, I would have gone out of that town at 100 miles an hour and put it way in the rearview mirror before I would have stopped, because I would make sure I'm beyond it. Of course, she was going to betray him one way or another
Yeah. True,
with her
true.
thing.
He was still shafted, but he could have tried harder, is what I'm saying. Nice Impala, though. Yeah, classic Impala.
I was reading about how they did the effect of the crash. They tied the car to a chain, and then the stunt driver drove it like 10 miles an hour, and they sped it up so that it would jerk stop, and he threw himself forward. Turns out the driver actually injured himself a bit on the steering wheel and had to go to the hospital. It was just kind of a sad footnote to the episode. But then they had a second one that they deliberately wrecked, and they just did a cut to the wrecked version.
I
But
have
that
this
always
weird thing
struck me as
where,
a little obvious
yeah, I
though.
have this weird thing where it's like some of the most impressive carnage you can do, like practical effects wise, is car stuff. But somehow that tracks with me the least. So when I think about Christopher Nolan flipping a truck in The Dark Knight, or driving a van into, the river in Inception, it's like I think about it and you watch a making of, and you're like, wow. But just on film, sometimes I'm like, yep, car blew up, Maybe I got desensitized that in the 80s. That might be it. The 80s action did that so much. That's where all the budget went. So now when I see it, I'm like, yep, that car just, because now you're mentioning, I'm like, that's a really cool effect, but it didn't even track when I was watching the episode,
Well, my point is they put a lot of effort into it, but then the way they edited the shot, it's still like the car stopped and there was no crumpling of the front. Then they cut, I think, a little late to the front of the car being crumpled, and it's like, oh, it stopped and then it got dented.
I was perfectly happy with that. Obviously enough to make that my background, so
Yeah, there it is. There it is. It's steam pouring out of it.
also for Zoom backgrounds. Well, actually I tend to be on the side of my screen because I'm talking to my mic, but my thought is if I'm in the middle like this and I can't have something like right behind my head, but maybe I need to rethink that. Yeah, mic
Yeah, to
placement, blah blah.
block your green screens differently every time. Just depends on what's going on.
Well, let's
What'd you think of
throw
the spiral staircase out of nowhere? It wasn't really
I was
there.
thinking we've seen that spiral staircase in episodes of The Twilight Zone. I just seem to remember that.
To me, it just seemed like a very obvious fake staircase because
Third from
people
the
walk
sun?
toward it,
Maybe third from the
maybe.
sun? I think they used that. It might be a prop staircase, but I'm like, I recognize it.
Yeah, but it's just the way they walk over to it and pretend to like step into it, and then they cut right there, and then they suddenly they're descending from the real staircase on another set.
It's probably from the Forbidden Planet ship or something.
I like spiral staircases. I always wanted to have one.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know where I'd put it.
I do want to throw out the questions for this one. Who in this episode went to the capital of the Twilight Zone?
Well, I think pretty obvious Mr. Redfield is our victim of the week. He stepped right into it
They even call
and
him a
tried to,
victim.
and we tried he tried to step out of it, and
They
then he
call him
tried
a
to fight his way
victim
out of it.
and one
The
who's it's
victim.
not his fault, right? They say these things directly in episode this time.
And they were feeling, Dorne was feeling kind of sorry for him. It's like, I'm sorry for you because, we really have to do this, but and yet he still had a peaceful, non-lethal solution to the problem in his back pocket the whole time and didn't just say, well, now that you've seen that we can change time, sir, we're going to send you back to where this all started. Goodbye. And wait, what? Click, boop, and he's gone. But the episode would be pretty short, so they had to protract it. In my notes, I had mentioned that I think this was all just part of their, their immigration plan. They got to have, fresh breeding stock, right? So every so often, when someone wanders into town, he's got to marry one of the locals and have some kids so they can keep their civilization
Yeah, you
going
don't want to
wherever
get
it is.
inbred.
Yeah, their little tiny 900 person civilization needs to be kept alive,
So do we have
unless
900?
immortality is part of the deal. Maybe they're that old. Maybe
I
they've been
was
around
going to
longer than
ask
them.
that. Or do we? I feel like Dorne is suggesting that this past information is from earlier generations, but he could have just been around the whole time because of the tech they have, you know?
Yeah, it wasn't stated either way, but I would think some of that tech would extend their life a bit. So maybe they're older than they appear, not necessarily immortal, but some of them may have been around for a while. But in the end, I think they would still want to have, fresh blood, as it were, in the town. So maybe they make it sound like this is the very first time they've had this problem.
Star Trek
We've never had to
Insurrection,
deal with
there's
this
another one for
before.
you.
Yeah, insurrection. There you go.
But yeah, we got 981 people living in the Twilight Zone permanently in this, but I still wouldn't say they're of the Twilight Zone. The alien encounter or whatever it was, or the man from the future, that would be the actual intervention of the Twilight Zone, I guess.
It's not like again mentioning A Good Life, little Anthony. Everybody in that town was forced into the Twilight Zone.
Yeah, I definitely prefer to live in Peaceful Valley if I'm choosing one.
Well,
Also, I was
Peaceful
watching
Valley
this and
is like the Hotel California, right? You can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave.
the cage, it's like, yeah, Pike, get out of there, right? Whereas Peaceful Valley, I'm like, I don't know, you could probably hang around here. Might be, I guess it depends on how the food is. I mean, they don't have a restaurant, but if someone's cooking at home and it's decent, can you get Indian curry in Peaceful Valley? That's a big sticking point for me. In 1963, I'm gonna guess no.
The food is the same. We don't see how they make food, presumably there are farms, but
Well, they've
I get
got
the
a sheet
impression
for, they probably got a little
they
sheet that
got
for Indian curry.
replicators. Yeah,
Yeah,
it's
well,
clearly a
maybe they do have
replicator.
Indian curry. It's just not popular or something. They should be able to do that. Yeah. I wonder if they ever send people out just to scout out the world as is, because
That was
Wakanda
my,
does that.
yeah, that's what I was thinking. They have to bring in knowledge of other things so they would know of Indian curry or, chicken wings or whatever, the food sure is. And bring back samples to run through their machine so they can replicate it later. Yeah.
Who does well let's make this a two-part question. Does Redfield deserve his trip into the Twilight Zone? Again, I think they state this outright in the episode.
Well, he demonstrates that he is of the mentality of people that they want to keep out.
Yeah, he is
But does
violent
that
and
mean
stupid, so
he's
he
violent and stupid? And so he does violent and stupid things. Does
So
he
he deserves a
deserve
mind
that?
wipe. He deserves a mind wipe. You know they're apologetic about it.
Is it mind wipe or is he go back in time? I don't know. It's
Yeah,
kind of a
yeah.
mind. Well, they left that kind of nebulous again when he sort of recognizes Ellen. And so that's where it makes it, well, is it a mind wipe or is it time travel? Which is it?
I guess it's not a foolproof technique, which is maybe why he slightly recognizes Ellen. So,
yeah, exactly. That's the thing that made me think it's maybe a mind wipe. But then,
so if it's not 100% time or mind wipe, if it's not 100% sure, you wouldn't want to do that. You know, you'd want to. If it's like 90% sure, you'd still be like, well, there's still a chance it might not work.
Well, the time retcon's better, like I said, because then there's no missing time. He can still be on his way and never suspect that anything happened in his life and not come back years later going, you know, I lost a day around here somewhere. I'm going to look around for it again and have to go through the whole thing all over again. So I don't know which way to cut the ending. Either way, it's a huge reset button, right? It's just... Yeah.
Twilight Zone can hit a reset button as much as it wants to because it's an anthology show, you know? serialized or episodic television is kind of like, I don't know how often you should press that button, as we have discussed. But here, I mean, Twilight Zone wants to hit the reset button. I'm usually fine with that.
Did Ellen kind of remind you of some of the women that Number Six had to deal with in The Village?
I can see that. Yeah. I guess that's where the Village vibe starts to creep in a little bit. Mm-hmm. Again, or the first Bond girl, the one that usually ends up dead. She could be that one.
Well, the prisoner is yet another example of a secret town, a secret society.
Right. So does the town deserve their status? The people living in the town, do they deserve this? Is it
well? This is where Kirk would come in with his speech, right? And say, you people have been living in your own world. You need to come out into the real world, right? You need to live as real men and women,
right? He'd call them stationary, all that, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, so, according to Captain Kirk, no, these people are scoundrels, but practically, again, if you make it Wakanda, now it's like, oh, well, yeah, of course, Wakanda should keep themselves isolated.
Oh, the question is whether their philosophy is a proper one. They need to hide the technology. Yeah, you don't want to like throw around blueprints to time machines or A-bombs and stuff to the general population and have them know. There needs to be some kind of gatekeeping. We don't have nuclear weapons in every home, right? So maybe over decades, they could have evolved a plan to start bringing this technology into the main world, into the real world. The actual world, I don't know, the greater world, and worked on it from that way instead of being completely reclusive. Because if they don't stay in contact with the real world, when do they make the determination that humanity is ready for their gifts? Right?
Yeah, for a real dorky parallel, I think I've mentioned I've been reading the original run of the Avengers comics, and I got to the Kree-Skaw War. Skrull War, where the Krees have their communication technology and the Skrulls want it because they want to retrofit it to blow things up real good. So that's kind of one of the essential. So that's kind of like here, Peaceful Eyes, like, well, we're using it for nice things, but you could easily use it for bad things. I mean, it almost makes it like an atomic energy allegory as well, you know?
Yeah. Well, it sounds like they're waiting for a, you know, one world government that everyone agrees with, everyone's happy, everyone is, you know, hunger and disease are gone and everyone lives fulfilling lives. In which point do they even need to reveal their technology? Because it sounds like we would have all found our way there regardless.
And instead of the ravage of the war, you'll go into a vaporization booth.
And then we become, yeah, Minyar 7. But it's a dilemma, because if we actually prove ourselves to be worthy of these gifts, then we will eventually discover the technology on our own if we are peaceful enough to survive, and in which case they can just kind of pop up and say, surprise, we've been here all along. Redfield's argument, though, is they kind of abdicating all responsibility. You know, with great power comes great responsibility to use this technology for good. The question becomes, how do you introduce it in a way that it can only be used for good and don't let bad guys get a hold of it? So that's their dilemma. That's the one they should have been working on for the last 100 years to solve, rather than just stick their head in the sand.
And you think, so he has a point. Curious about, you know, the '50s. They know Stalin's dead, so they must have an inkling of the H bomb. You know, that seems like something that would be an existential crisis for them, where they might want to be a little more involved with the world.
Yeah, I'm sure this is, in some ways, perhaps an allegory for the Cold War and, you know, escalating technologies and stuff. And
unless that shield of theirs is like, you know, H-bomb proof, then I guess they're good to go.
The shield might be the first thing everyone should have. Okay, you're now all defended. Okay, no one can hurt you. Now let's move on to the next bit.
Well, let's place this on the tripometer. Usual zero is not trippy all. Five's very trippy. How would you like to rate this one?
I think some of the concepts could have been, you know, trippier, but of course they just didn't have the budget for it. It's really more of a play, more of a three-act play than a full-fledged fantastic voyage, you know. So I think that kind of makes it less trippy. But I like the idea, like I said, we've been talking about other variations of secret societies, secret civilizations here on Earth, that things are being done differently and the world doesn't know about it. And some of them ostensibly are for our own good.
Maybe Ant Island, A Bug's Life. I just watched that like last week.
Oh, really?
Just thinking of other examples of these yeah, you see, that people don't get out of.
You're coming up with some good ones. Like I said, I got to like Eureka and Wakanda, and that was about
it. We'll be doing the Disney Atlantis film soon, so I'll be doing that one. There's another
Atlantis
one.
Atlantis is the prototype. Yeah, it's the lost island or continent or everyone to believe somewhere out there in the Atlantic that, you know, didn't prove to exist, but...
I'll be watching it again. So I remember actually quite liking that movie when I saw it about 10 years ago. So I'm looking forward to watching it again. Hopefully it does not disappoint.
So we go from Atlantis to Shangri-La to Wakanda. All these variations of a theme. I don't know. Overall, I mean, it was not really, I don't think the mystery was played up quite enough. Maybe it's just my perspective here in the 21st century, but they could have made it a little more mind-bendingly weird. So I maybe give it like a 2.5. How trippy do you think it is?
I thought the concepts were enough to at least call it a 3. So yeah, mm-hmm. like you say, except for a couple little gadgets and one big gadget, there's not so much visually going on. But then, like you said, just the car thing's kind of cool. I guess that's not a trippy thing as much as that's cool. But even if they edited it weird for 63 television, that's great. So yeah. 1963, I'll give it a 3. That makes sense. do you have any other, or do you have some final thoughts for Valley of the Shadow? A pretty bright episode, I mean, as far as the cinematography is concerned.
I don't know if I had a favorite line from it. I think one of the ones that jumped out at me is like, sometimes when I'm asleep and thinking, I said, that's called dreaming, Ellen. It's called dreaming.
It's like they don't know. They haven't sent out enough emissaries.
They don't. The last English teacher died in a peaceful valley and no one's teaching the vocabulary words anymore. Again, well, they probably have helmets they put on their heads and learn all of human knowledge, right? They just plug in. It's that little glass bowl that they used on them at the end. It's also a teaching device. I don't know.
And also good for mixing cake batter.
I knew there's something up with her, though, when, you know, he replicates the gun. He comes up the non-existent staircase into the, I call it the tribunal room, because it's got these three chairs and it's sitting up on a dais.
Maybe that puts him on Michael Scott level of improv. You know, everything's just, I got a gun.
So he shoots everybody. He fires the gun 3 times, runs out of the building, and she's just sitting in the car like nothing happened. You can hear those gunshots that were right inside the door.
She doesn't know what gunshots are.
That could be it. She maybe never heard a gun fired in her life until that moment. But still, I don't know. That was just kind of weird. So the reveal of her, you know, in being in on it was not that great, but that was pretty funny. Yes, I think in my sleep.
Sure.
And I don't know. Yeah. Maybe we'll find another Twilight Zone someday that takes the concept in a different direction in one of the later series, which. Because I've forgotten, honestly, I don't remember if there has been another one, but I think there's some fun to be mined in those situations.
Yeah, I but think it all turns into vibes eventually.
Yeah, but it all turns into the prisoner in the end when you know you're come into it and you're not allowed to leave, and so you have to escape. So
Patrick McGoohan. They needed some rovers in here. That's what you were missing.
Yeah, if they had a couple of rovers, that would have been awesome. It's, instead of just a you know a glass wall, they had like a weird devices prowling in the woods looking for people to make sure they don't run away. Then I guess this whole totalitarian thing, because you think maybe there are some people who are more free-minded who want to leave Peaceful Valley, and we never hear about them. So I guess they're all well indoctrinated, all 981 of them.
Yet Cavender is coming with the backdoor pilot. I guess that's my final thought. As for us, we're Time Enough Podcast. You can support us on Patreon at Podcastio Podcastius, where you'll also hear podcasts like A Cloud Disney, where I will be talking about that Atlantis movie soon, and already talked about A Bug's Life. Films and Filth, where we talk about the top and bottom films on IMDb as rated by IMDb users. Podcast 1999, where we talk about Space 1999. And some video game podcasts with Luke Loves Pokemon, Hyrule Field Report about Zelda, and the Game Show, which I think I was on a few weeks ago, crashing and burning. I was caught at the last second. I'd already had a couple drinks. I did not win that one by a long shot. They said it'll be about retro games, but retro ended up being 1994, 1999, and 2004. It's like, oh, I thought we were going 80s. Uh-oh.
Not retro enough.
Not retro enough. Okay, well, I'm going to attempt to leave my town and go to work, which is in a slightly different town, and hopefully I won't run into a shield. It'll be a real train wreck if I do.
Hey, you know, I just replicated this sandwich. Here it is.
All right.
It's pretty cool.
Don't eat it. Don't eat it. Replicate a gun. Footprints lead to the sea of clouds, and Iceland's Helen dream out loud. Over patch quilts of serpentine, where we awake within the dream. I know I knew you all along, forever in the song of songs. Wormholes, they link up dimensions, in spirals to many dimensions. Electric honey grids sail through, said peekaboo to deja vu. I know I knew you all along, forever in this song of songs. In this sea of clouds, in this sea of clouds, all of what's real's invisible. What's eternal is invincible. I know I knew you all along, forever in this song of songs. In this sea of clouds, in this sea of clouds, in this sea of clouds, forever in this sea of clouds.